We'll keep it real in the field, you heard?
Championship.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the inaugural edition of Championships Rounds with Gorgeous George Garcia, presented by the Amp Radio Network. I'm your host tonight, Proteus, coming out to you from the mean streets of Brantford, Ontario. And I'm going to bring in my co-host in just a second. He is coming at us live from the Race and Sportsbook in Mandalay Bay Event and Convention Center, I believe. We'll get that cleared up with Gorgeous George when he comes on the line. Let's bring him in right now. Gorgeous George Garcia.
What's up, fellas?
What's happening, George? How are you?
I'm doing good. It's Mandalay Bay Race and Sportsbook is what it is.
And thank you very much.
We're here, and it's March Madness time, so I'm kind of like in and out of some rooms, but I'm happy to be with you guys.
And we're happy to have you. And of course, we knew when we were coming on the line with you that you would be in the Race and Sportsbook. And of course, we're going to discuss a little bit of March Madness a little bit later in the show. But as I was saying, this is the inaugural, the debut episode of Championship Rounds with Gorgeous George Garcia. We hope to have this as a monthly installment on Amp Radio. And again, like I said, we are glad to have you, George.
The pleasure's all mine. Can't wait to talk hoops, MMA,
okay.
Chick, you name it, man. I'm ready. I'm gunning for anybody that wants some.
Exactly. And this show is not going to be, as I mentioned to you earlier on, this show is not going to be MMA-centric. We've got a whole bunch of just stuff that I was feeling nostalgic about and things I was thinking about. So this is going to just be out of the brain of Proteus right now. And of course, as everybody knows, and if you don't know, now you know, you can follow Gorgeous George at MMA Junkie George. Okay, George, so we may have some new listeners that don't listen to your show, and of course, may not know your role all the way with MMA Junkie. As we know, you are at the head of the rankings division of not only MMA Junkie, but USA Today. And I was wondering if you could just kind of give us a little look behind the curtain as to what that consists of. Because we had a little talk about the Marion Renault and Betchko Hea draw that happened the last weekend. And we were wondering what an odds maker or a person in your shoes would do with that kind of fight. So explain exactly what you do and how much time you have to spend on doing that and kind of what you would do with that Betchko Hea Marion Renault fight.
That was actually the alarm reminding me that I'm on Amp Radio tonight. I said a couple of those because I knew I'd be brilliantly buzzed, and I definitely didn't want to miss my spot. So anyway, thank you very much for the kind words. And yes, aside from hosting the show, I basically chair the rankings for USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie for the MMA division. What happens is every week, either late Saturday night, sometimes Sunday, sometimes as late as Monday, whenever I can get to it, I go in there and I grind, man. And so I take all the cards from the weekend, not just the big ones, but I keep an eye on KSW, World Series, ONE Championship, anything that's affected outside of the UFC and Bellator. Because the UFC and Bellator basically have 95% of the ranked fighters that, you know, that we discussed. But there are a few out there. So I'll take a look and see what else is out there other than UFC and Bellator and you know, what went down, what needs to be looked at, what involved fighters that were ranked. It's about a 2-3 hour process per week. I really take my time with it. And, you know, I want to see who performed, who didn't. Go back and review anything that might make a difference. Because when you're ranking the top 15 fighters, which is what we do for every division, when you're ranking the top 15 fighters from every division, you want to make sure that, you know, you're towards the end when there's tiebreakers, like, you know, who should be in the honorable mentions or who should be, you know, in the top 10 or whatever. What it comes down to is finishes, win streaks, how impressive a win can be. We call them statement wins. A quality loss. I'll give you an example. Bernil Dariush. He fought Edson Barbosa. Yep. Man, he looked good before getting caught. You know, Edson was really having problems with him. So, like, in that case, I didn't drop Dariush at all. And I should say that processes, I get things going, and I think, you know, like my input weighs heavily. But it's not the final outcome. It's, I pitch it to our editorial guys. They review it. A lot of the time they agree with me. A lot of times they say, well, you know, here are our thoughts. And then we basically come to a conclusion between all of us collectively as a team. But I think they respect my hustle and the fact that I'm in there and I really, really look at these things. And I take the time out to carve out a nice, you know, email basically reflecting on everything that took place and pointing out everything that took place. So going back to Dariush, you know, he looked really good. That was a quality loss. I didn't want to drop him at all. As far as Betch and Renault, you take a look at who's ahead of Betch, who's below Renault, or vice versa in either case because it was a draw. And there really, really wasn't much to do on either side. It was a draw, and it wasn't a loss nor a win. So I felt like the best thing to do was to just leave them be. Now, once it gets to John Morgan and Dan Stupp and Matt Erickson and some of the other guys, of course, they'll throw in their recommendations. And then on Tuesday, they're published on our site. And on Wednesday, they're published in the newspaper. But, you know, we take a lot of great pride in it. And I think going forward, they may be even more of importance because sometimes I believe the UFC may get away from doing the rankings after all. It seems like it's bringing them more trouble than it was intended, especially everything associated with fighters that are lobbying for the Muhammad Ali Act to be included, you know, for MMA to be included in that.
Right, right. Okay, so that's kind of the same thing. We had the conversation on Sunday, and we kind of said the same thing, but I thought it was pertinent to get your information on what you thought about that Betch Gahea, Marin Renault fight. Now, I'm going to just change.
Well, she really did. She surprised me a little bit. I didn't think she was going to look as good as she did. I basically think she's kind of like a time filler, where as they get this 135-pound division going, I think she's fun. I didn't like her at first, but she really makes things fun.
Right.
At the weigh-ins, at media days, she has a good stare down. She gets into it with the fans. She'll put on a show. She'll twerk. She'll dance. She'll show everybody that booty she's got. It's a fun time with Betch Gahea. Honestly, I don't really like her. She makes things fun. And even the whole four horsewomen angle, you know, that's basically helped her probably get that fight with Ronda Rousey. Who knows if she would have been in line for that. But anyway, I really respect her skills. They've come around, you know, she's really tough. I thought Renault was going to piece her up because Renault was more the striker, and I didn't think the fight would really visit the ground. But Betch held her own. You know, eventually Renault got that third round, and luckily she got 2-10-8, which led to that draw. But she was basically staring at, you know, a shutout going into the third round. And you know, she was threatening many ways, first with the striking and then the submission. She didn't get it, and that's why she was left with the draw. So I don't know why she's saying – I think there's some comments saying she doesn't accept it, but she's got to accept it because that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
10-9 for Betch and 10-8 the other way for Renault. So we had ourselves a draw.
Okay, so as I was saying a little bit earlier, I would like to switch gears a bit and just kind of pick your brain a bit because you're an old school guy, and I've thought there was no better person to ask this question than you. With the Brazilian Cowboy getting the win back in Fortaleza over the Dirty Bird, I heard on the UFC commentary crew, they mentioned that the prevalence of the body triangle in today's MMA, And I was immediately transported back to the first use of this of the body triangle in MMA. And I'm sure it jogs a memory in your brain as in your mind brain as well. So what memories do you have of Ivan Salivary first using the body triangle in MMA?
Wow. Oh, you're right. Ivan Salivary, man, what a beast. In fact, I think
right
there was a submission where he was able to get it when he had had the triangle on, but yet he was able to mount him, you know, where the opponent was belly down. The opponent escapes me. And the pressure that's created on the spine and the neck is one of those where you don't even know what you're tapping to other than the worst possible feeling. I think you're tapping to the fact that you think your head's going to blow up. But anyway, you know, that is basically a hold where 9 out of 10 times, maybe 19 out of 20, I don't know. When you're in control like that, you're just suffocating the life out of your opponent. It's really hard to break that hold unless you actually attack the foot that's, you know, locked in. And in doing so, you're basically now leaving yourself open to the rear naked choke. But amazingly, I believe it was Ray Borg that was able to spin inside the guard and get out of that. So there is a process.
Correct.
I've done it before. And like anything else, Proteus, any holds that are out there, any attacks that are out there, as soon as they become efficient, the defense is already being created, almost like an anecdote. You know, if we find out there's now the Brantford, Canada flu, well, trust me, somebody's going to be working on an anecdote for that, you know, so that more people, less people don't get inflicted by the flu. And I think that's exactly the same thing that's going to happen here. It'll take a while. You know, sometimes it can be years, but there'll be a defense to it, or at least the recognition of how not to get there. Or even further to that, sorry, I'm losing my voice. Even further to that, I think a lot of fighters are just going to start doing more homework and recognizing 2 steps away from getting a takedown, getting your back taken, getting a body triangle put on you. You know, because when you're there, for the most part, if the referee's letting you work from that position, you've basically just given a whole round up and basically a 10-9 score. So you don't even want to get there. You don't have to worry. You don't even want to get to the point where you're worrying about a defense. You just don't want to get there at all.
Yeah, and it was funny because when I remember going back to the Ivan Salivary submission, he didn't even have to apply anything else but the body triangle. And it was just such an earlier time, and it was the first time we've ever seen that. And as you mentioned, we just saw Ray Borg have the answer to the body triangle and use it very effectively just recently, last weekend. My question then comes to, as an MMA fan and as a long-time MMA fan, what kind of changes have you seen, have you noticed coming through your fandom of MMA from when you started to now?
Well, that's a great question, actually. I guess I go through different types of cycles myself as a fan, where I will go through points, or, you know, I'll go through blocks of time where I'm a real fan of technique, except when it becomes, let me start with this. I subscribe to, even though that we're looking at a sport in mixed martial arts, I believe there has to be an entertainment value, because what's happening is we're going through a phase, or we went through a phase, and we're kind of currently going through that phase where fighters were manipulating the rules to their favor. And even though they were out there, you know, they were still engaging and grappling and striking. I think strategically some were trying to win rounds. I think a lot of them were trying to avoid the damage, because in the last few years, you know, TBI has become a real concern. And so in doing that, I guess I go through my phases where I want the fighters to have longevity in the sport, and I want the fighters to be around for a long time. And so I can appreciate the technique that get them in there and get them out safely, like Demetrius Johnson. He'll flat out tell you, I want to go in there and end the fight as quick as I can and not sustain any damage. I don't want to play with my kids and become a happy old man, you know, with kids and grandkids. And I want to be able to complete a sentence when I start it. And that's cool and all. But the only problem is for this sport to continue to survive and to thrive and to grow, there has to be also the entertainment factor. So then 6 months later, you could hear me saying, fuck all that shit. Fuck the technique. Go in there and bang. Go in there and go for the finish. Go for broke. Throw the kitchen sink at the guy or the gal or whatever, you know? And that's the selfish fan in me that tends to change over time according to what's happening, what the landscape is. I think some fans go through the same thing as I do. It's just my position's a little bit more public. And a lot of people will check me on that and say, hey, man, 6 months ago you were in favor of something like that. Now you're saying other stuff. But that's just the way I am, man. I do tend to change my opinion on certain things. But anything that has to do with the growth of the sport and I think the overall health of the sport, then I'm into it. And I'll even swallow my pride and go, I had it wrong or I changed my mind.
Well, I think it's very healthy for everyone to have the ability to change their mind on certain things because, you know, as you get older, as things change, I mean, as we've said, MMA has changed so much. I mean, if we still have the mindset of Royce Gracie in the first UFC, we wouldn't get very far in MMA nowadays, would we, George? It just wouldn't fly anymore because the game has progressed so much. But one thing that we were about on Sunday. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. You go ahead, please.
No. I was just going to say, you're right. You're right. The game has progressed, and we've gone through different phases of it. And I think it's exactly the same as the major sport that we all follow. You'll see the NFL go through a phase where you want big offensive linemen, a fullback, and you want to run the ball 30 times. You want a tailback that can run. You want a quarterback that can manage the game, not turn the ball over. 3 years later, you'll see a team throwing 50, 60 times, spread offense, no running back in the backfield at all, you know? Right, because you have to adjust according to how the defense has adjusted to you. And I think the same thing is happening in mixed martial arts. A lot of times, the grapplers were, they started to dominate the sport a little bit, in my opinion. And now I'm seeing a lot of athletic fighters, male and female, who have no wrestling background or little wrestling background, and they're stopping that takedown or getting up from the takedown. And then you see a more refined athlete standing up versus a wrestler who's still trying to refine his or her striking skills, and it becomes a mismatch. So that all is interesting to me. And the fact that the landscape of the sport changes, you know, so quickly, I love it. I really do.
Yeah. This is one thing that we were talking about on the weekend, and what I think is what you're saying there is what you highlighted is takedown defense, and that's one thing that I've seen in this modern iteration of MMA is that the takedown defense has really gotten to a point where we're seeing, you know, guys using flying knees as a defense against a single leg takedown, a double leg takedown. You're going for a leg, and guess what? Flying knee to the face. We just saw that last weekend. Barbosa adding to his highlight reel of great knockouts. This is what I'm trying to get to the heart of. I mean, we're really seeing a lot of really good change coming in this MMA game. And the gentleman that I was speaking to on Sunday, Ryan Booty, he was like, you know, where did these flying knees come from? And I think the first time we saw that was Jose Aldo in the WEC, correct? Against Cubby Sampson. Yeah, I mean, and we're just seeing this. We saw not only Barbosa use it, but we saw the gentleman in Bellator who broke her.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago we saw Paul Daly. Open. Paul Daly stopped the fight with that against what was his name? Brandon.
Exactly.
Not Gert, but I forget the tough East Coast kid from Massachusetts.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Tough boy. Yeah. Sorry, the Heinekens are killing my brain cells. But you know who I'm talking about? Paul Daly. 3 weeks ago, he landed a beautiful
yes.
knee, and 3 months before that, we had MVP landing probably the best knee that's ever been delivered. And even going back to what you were saying, Jose Aldo against Cub Swanson, another knee was. At the first Pride in the United States, I think it was Pride 32, you see Robbie Lawler landing one on Joey Villasenor. The knee can be very effective. You know, it's basically, like you said, take down the fence in a, somewhat, because most of the time someone is trying to, you know, shoot a double on you or at least get the fight somewhere that where they're a little bit more comfortable. I'm not sure that's what Cub was doing at the time he got hit, because he's only like 8 seconds into the fight. But you're right. Different ways to counter a takedown, a double leg. The knee is one of them. And I think it's a thing of beauty. I think more fighters are going to start hitting that knee. I think grapplers, wrestlers primarily, are going to have to figure out how they can feint and throw the striker out. You know, throw the striker off and make sure they don't get caught with that.
Yeah, and really, I think that's exactly what you just said. It's an evolution of the striking game, having to deal with the takedown game. It's just amazing to see it happen. And just quickly, it just flashed into my brain that, you know, we're going to see, you know, a striker versus a grappler coming up soon with Michael Bisping versus GSP. And I wonder, just seeing what we're seeing with the takedown defense and these knees coming out, if we're going to see something like that happen in that fight, it's really amazing to just kind of let your brain go and think about what could happen in future fights. And what do you think about that real quickly? Let's just weigh in real quick about what do you think, because we're talking about takedown defense. What do you think about Bisping versus GSP?
Well, I love the fight. I wish it wouldn't have been made, but once it got made, I support it. And I don't know that a flying knee will come into play on that one. I did want to say one other thing, by the way. Back in 2008, I believe.
Yes.
Don't quote me on the year. I remember Lyoto Machida, he was fighting Rashad Evans. He was fighting a lot of guys. And he had a wicked knee. But what was throwing people off their game was the threat of the knee. And he would kind of feint with, you know, by turning his hip and lifting his leg like he was going to throw a knee. It was very effective. So I think you'll see a little bit more of that from guys that want to throw the knee, because they're not going to throw the knee every single time. But anyway, that thought went through my head. As far as Bisping, you know, that explosive knee that's thrown, that's knocking people out, I don't know that Bisping has it with that type of speed and explosion. So it's in his arsenal, but it's just like old fat GG over here. If you ask me to do a cartwheel, I'll do it for you. It's just not going to be beautiful. I think Michael Bisping can throw a knee, and it'll be much better than Mike Cartwheel, but I don't think it'll be anything like what MVP is doing or Paul Daly. I think GSP is very, very proficient with the studying of his opponent. I think he'll put himself in a position where he's not exposed to a knee like that. His is all based on timing, and I'm telling you, that guy strikes like a cobra. The fight itself, almost 4 years away from the game is a long time, guys, but when Dominic Cruz did it against the Kenta Bugaki, the one thing it highlighted to me was that if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be a great fighter. And that's what he is. GSP's like a Dominic Cruz. He's a great fighter. You know, their preparation, their mindset, their physical skills, they're at a level that's higher than most of the people in their division. So I think if someone can overcome it, it is a guy like GSP. I think he'll be prepared. I think he'll win the fight, and I think he'll win it via decision. Safe way to say, but there are times when he gets going with the ground and pound where he's pretty vicious. I mean, he roughed up BJ Penn pretty bad. He roughed up Matt Serra pretty bad. Those were mostly 55ers that have gone up to 70. So I do recognize that, and Michael Bisping will be a bigger man, but I think he'll win a decision.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, basically GSP is taking this fight at 185 is because he can't rehydrate the way he used to. I mean, we all know, it's documented, he used to use an IV bag, and he can't do that anymore. So I think, again, this leads me into our next topic of conversation. We were having a conversation on Sunday about weight cutting. And I know that the trend of weight cutting came in with the wrestler into MMA, but we had a question, and I thought maybe this would be a good question to ask you, a gentleman who's been in the sport for a long time. Can you remember the first person who decided they were going to take advantage of the weight cut and fight at a lesser weight than they actually were going to be on the night of the fight?
Well, I would say the most highlighted case would be Tito Ortiz. The UFC had original divisions where it was 170, 200, and 200 and over. They had to create 205 for Tito Ortiz because he couldn't make 200. But to me, I think Tito, having that wrestling background, recognized that if the skills are pretty even, but I'm a lot bigger than you are 24 hours later, it's going to make a difference at some point. And it did. So I think he was one of the guys that was able to get away with fighting guys that were smaller than him, quite frankly. And he had some success. At the same time, he was able to blend that with having great cardio, which he didn't have early on. It wasn't bad cardio, but he lost the fight versus Frank Shamrock, a smaller guy, because of cardio. So then he addressed it. He said, I'm going to be the bigger guy, but I'm also going to become a cardio machine. But to answer your question, I believe Tito Ortiz is one of the first guys to really exploit the size differential of a man who can cut weight, who can do it efficiently, and be able to perform the next night. And that was like late 90s.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe
I
about a good
right.
five
think...
years into the fight game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good place to put the marker. Having to start a new division for a particular person because of weight issues is definitely a good place to put that marker. But let's talk about more divisions. You brought it up real quickly there. Let's talk about having more divisions, and let's not get crazy and create a whole bunch of divisions. But let's talk about creating a couple divisions, you know, between 155 and say, you know, heavyweight. I mean, we could use some more divisions. We could in this new era of the Empire, or the WMIG, or whatever they're called. We could probably use if we take their model, because they haven't talked to us yet, right, GG? They haven't told us what they want to do. But what we can take from what they've done so far is that they'd like more belts in the mix. So maybe more weight classes would be the answer to having more stars, more big fights, etc. Let's get your thought on that.
Right. So let's just start with the fact that the UFC has about 525 athletes on their roster, and I would say 40% of them are welterweight and lightweight. It's about close to 100, give or take, 55ers and 70-pounders on, you know, active on their roster. And you know, honestly, I don't have a problem with it because there's really that many great fighters in that division. Except there's a lot of guys that definitely have a problem with making 70 and definitely have a problem with making 55. Except the 55ers that have a problem with 55 are not big enough to fight at 70. And the ones that have a problem making 70 are definitely outclassed at 85. So I've pitched that if we're starting at 115 pounds with the women's division in the UFC, the strawweight, and we go to 25 men's flyweight, 35 both men and women bantamweight, and then 45 now men's and women lightweight at 55. I say insert 65 and 75, but take out 170. Now, granted, a lot of the history of the sport would go out the window because a lot of stuff happened in our sport at 170 pounds. I realize that. But look back on any other sport that we've had, and there's been some dramatic changes. Hell, about 35 years ago, the NBA instituted the three-point line. And right now I'm standing outside the sportsbook here at the Mandalay Bay, and I'm watching a lot of college kids that can hit the three-point line like no other, and it's made the game really, really exciting. And that was a good, at least 80 years into the existence of the NBA. That was a big, big rule change. So removing 70 and adding 65 and 75, I don't think is the most egregious addition and subtraction to a sport. I think it would cut down everything so that it's pretty, you know, there's a lot of parity going from 115 all the way to 205. I used to be more of a proponent of the 195-pound division, but I just don't think we have the athletes for it now. So if they did it, I'd support it. I don't think it has to be done, though. But I really feel like 65 and 75 would add those two belts. We'd retire 70. So we'd basically be adding one belt to what they already have. No harm, no foul. But I believe that it would help a lot of the guys in those divisions to be closer to the weight that they should safely fight at. So I'm all for that. And if in maybe 3-5 years, we have to do 95, and that way we're good from all the way from 115 to 205, then I'm all for it. As far as heavyweights, I'm not sure where I sit with that right now. A lot of people want to cut it in half and say, hey, let's do something at 235, but I don't know that we're there yet. I think there's been a lot of guys that fight at 240 that have proven that they can take out a guy that rehydrates to 280, 290 on fight night. So I don't know that that's made a difference just yet. I think I'm okay with leaving the heavyweight division the way it is. As far as 65 and 75, those need to happen soon.
Okay, so it sounded like we got a big win there just as you were answering the question. Did we get a big win?
We did, but I stopped keeping track of what's what, so I don't know who won or who's out, but I can tell you, I think we're just at the point where basically one team became three possessions ahead and everybody started feeling comfortable that the game was in the bag. Now the other team will just have to go out and dribble the clock out, and that's that. But I believe that's the push you heard. Or it could be that over-under. You know, sometimes the game's already finished.
Yeah.
The team's up by 20, so the side has been settled. But it's whether they can hit that over or the under, and I think that's maybe that roar you might have heard.
Okay, so we'll get into that. We'll get into that in just a second, because that's my next question, and it's going to have to fill a bunch of time. But here's the next question that's MMA related. We have seen with Tony Ferguson not getting his show money, and in previous iterations, we have seen the fighter get his show money. And of course, you know, Tony Ferguson's money was going to be a great deal more than, say, you know, your regular fighter or even, I guess, Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, because he was fighting for the championship and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So let me ask you moving forward. First of all, do we need to, obviously we need to have a kind of a more, eagle eye perspective on these contracts moving forward, now that we've seen that the new ownership of the UFC is not going to play ball like the old ownership of the UFC played. So give us your thoughts on the whole situation moving forward and what you thought about, you know, Tony's situation.
I thought Tony should have been paid. Sorry. I thought that what prevented the fight from happening was they didn't want to pay him the money that they were going to pay. They didn't want to pay him the money to fight Michael Johnson that they were going to fight, that they were going to pay him to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. And while I understand what they're saying, hey, look, some of the luster's off Ferguson fight because he's not fighting for a title technically. He's just fighting. I think the hand they were dealt at that particular time, I really felt like they needed to make a call, like an executive decision, a call on the fly. And I, you know what, man, they have to understand something. I you know, I know there's a caveat at the bottom of the ticket that says, shit goes down, shit happens. We advertise the card, but it may not go down the way we expected. Tough shit. Now, it's not explained that way, but I think you all know what I'm saying. So as someone that consumes, you know, the product and buys the ticket, they're right. You know, that can happen. But the one thing that makes the UFC special is a lot of times they basically grow their brand, their sport, their shows, their product by feel, you know, because they were a privately owned business. And I honestly feel at that particular moment, they just should have said, you know what, fuck this shit. People wanted to see Khabib and Tony fight. Not going to go down because Khabib has already been IV'd and we have to look out for his health. But there's another guy that's willing to do it. His medicals are done. There's history behind him and Tony. Tony's accepted the fight. The only thing holding us back is the fact that we want to pay him less. This is a company that was paid $4.2 billion. Come on now. I mean, I feel like they could have cut the extra 50, 75 grand, whatever it was they were trying to reduce them by, save the fight. Do something good for the UFC, do something good for your fans, the ones that are in the arena, the ones that have already bought the pay-per-view, the ones that have already made the plans. You can make up those 75 or 50 or 75 G's somewhere else. And turns out I was right, because that main event was a snoozer. And guess what? Michael Johnson and Tony Ferguson may have at least been able to appease some of the ones that walked out of there disappointed. I was there, Proteus. I got a ticket at the last minute. Mine was free, so I caught a break. But I'm telling you, if I would have paid, I would have been a little pissed off because of the bad taste the main event left me. But give me that Ferguson fight versus Michael Johnson, I probably would have said, you know what? But let's give him a pass because they gave me that. Same thing goes for anybody that consumed it at home, the pay-per-view. You know, $60, you can't just take that for granted, man. That's no joke. Once a month to be paying a company that's highly successful that type of money. So I think they have to realize that. And I know it's not a drop in the bucket, but, you know, I don't know. I've seen them in the past spend money for the good of the company. And I think this would have been in line with that. So Ferguson should have been paid. I understand the UFC's tactic of possibly getting him to concede and maybe not pay him as much. Good for the overhead of the show, but I think long-term it wasn't good. It wasn't a good decision.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think it was a dirty move. It was kind of along the same lines as Bellator did when Matt Mitrione dropped out of the fight as well with, again, you tell me, I'll tell you. My brain's dead as well tonight. Sorry, apologies. Exactly, with Fedor. It was kind of along the same lines of that. It was a very big show, and the way that even the way they treated the journalists. I mean, I was watching the live feed of the early weigh-ins with John Morgan, and I mean, they waited in the whole 2 hours before finally Cold Coffee broke the news that the fight was off. You know, 5-10 minutes before, and then all of a sudden, 2 minutes before the end of the time, they come out with a statement the UFC does. I just thought that, you know what, man, they could have treated everybody better. They could have treated the journalists better. They could have treated the fans who were buying the pay-per-view and didn't know that Khabib was off the card until, you know, when they were purchasing it, because some people just, you know, are spur-of-the-moment kind of purchasers. So I think you're right when you say that, you know, the UFC could have handled it better. And this new management doesn't seem, and it was funny because when I was advocating for the sale, George, when I was advocating for the sale of the UFC before the sale came up, I can't remember who it was who said, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you may not get what you want. And I don't know for sure what it is that we, yeah, I don't think we're seeing what we thought we would see on this with this sale. What do you think?
You're right. I mean, we're almost, let me see. I think that all went down around the time that Connor and Nate fought for the second time. So let's just put it at 2016. I don't know when the official ink dried, you know, on the purchase of the sale, but let's call it mid-2016. Yeah. And we're a quarter into 2017, and we haven't even heard much from the new owners themselves at WME, IMG, their vision or anything. I think they're still trying to figure it out. Or I think they know what they want to do. It's just that they don't want to admit that it's not in line with how a sports promotion should be run. And honestly, when you say a sports promotion, you're tempted to say the way a sport should be run, because they are the sport. Whether anybody wants to, you know, think otherwise or not, they are the sport. So, you know, I think they're just basically just kind of hiding behind the fact that, you know, they don't have to really say anything. It's business as usual. Nobody's really on the attack about the fact that they haven't really publicly said anything. So they're just going to go out there and try and recover some of their money and try and keep the business afloat. Okay, that's cool. They seem like sharp people, obviously. You know, some of the other businesses that they've been involved in, but you know, I don't care about that. I don't care about what else they do and how else they've done it. I care about this sport. So far, I don't like the way they're running it, you're right. I think I long for the days of Zuffa, honestly.
Yeah.
At least Lorenzo and Frank had a love for combat sports, and you know, they I think they went through those trials and tribulations so they could recognize how much each strategic move meant to them, meant to the brand, meant to everybody. I'm not sure these guys get it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like WMIG or the Empire, they took on a bet with the Zuffas that they could run it better, and we're like on a 5-year kind of cycle to see if they can do that. And I know I sound like Vegas Ford right now, so let's move on real quick. You had Mandalay Bay's Mike Furiano. Am I saying that correctly?
Perenio.
Yeah, Perenio. Sorry. Thank you very much. On the show, and he was speaking about gaming, and you guys got into, you know, the start of March Madness. Of course, we're hearing you being there right now and in the throes and in the midst of, you know, Las Vegas in March Madness. So give us your thoughts on this year's tournament and give us your thoughts on betting in general, because you guys were talking not only about MMA, but you were also talking about basketball. So let's get your view on all things betting and of course, who you think is going to win the tournament.
Well, Perenio, I thought, touched on something that was interesting that I want to highlight on your show, and that's the fact that not only do we all know women's MMA is growing, but gambling on women's MMA and the demographic of a woman who's a fan of the sport, gambling herself, whether it be male or female, that's growing leaps and bounds as well. The fact that MMA is on par with what boxing pulls, I thought that was huge. So Mike shared a lot of interesting tidbits there on the show. Gambling in general, look, it's a vice. It really is, just like drinking, just like sex addiction, just like people that are addicted to spending and other vices that are out there. Smoking, it's a vice. You have to definitely control it. I've seen it ruin life. So it's something that we kind of do the tap dance around on the show. Look, I want people to have fun as long as they can control themselves. But I don't know who's listening. I don't know how vicious this can be for somebody who gets a taste of it, gets that first win, you know, parlay 20 and win 8,000. And the next thing you know, they're blowing their college savings. I definitely don't want that. I want responsible people to do it. I've been doing it for a long time. I have fun with it. I think it adds something to it. And I definitely believe 100% that it's what made the NFL the monster that it is. I think it can help propel mixed martial arts even higher, because I'm not the biggest hockey fan or the biggest baseball fan or golf fan, but I'll tell you what, if you give me a tip and say, this guy's going to win, and I put a little bit of money on it, guess what? I'm watching it. And all of a sudden, you might have a fan. Maybe there may be something that strikes a chord with me, and I'm into the sport before, you know, whereas before I wouldn't have been. So, again, it all has to be done in moderation, responsibly. I think it's a real fun time. I'm glad they put odds out on all the fights now, and the odds makers are definitely a lot more sharper. So are the gamblers. So it's fun. We're all adults here, you know. I do say this. I will say this. Even though I said it's a vice, I guess I mean it. When talking about a responsible adult, I think you should have the capacity in your brain to know what's right, what's wrong, what are your limits. And hopefully it doesn't affect them. So, you know, although I feel bad, I don't feel too bad either.
Right, right. I mean, I've worked in casinos, and I get where you're coming from. Yeah, I mean, everybody has to be a big boy at some point and take control of their lives. But let's give the degenerates another. Well, go ahead. No, I'm getting into it right now. I think.
Plays. North Carolina and Arizona. Yeah. I filled out two brackets, and I felt like I saw Arizona up close here in Las Vegas. I saw them run through UCLA and Oregon, and they're playing some really good ball. It reminds me of their team. They had a team, I think, in the late 90s who also was like a 6 seed and just went out there and got hot at the right time. So yeah. When you're clicking at the conference tournament one week before, that's a good sign. Plus, they have talented players. But I can't stay away. I had to get in another pool, and the other one I went with North Carolina. So a little bit of chopped Carolina, but I think Arizona is either a 2 or 3 seed. And that's a little bit of West Coast bias, but I think, you know, I covered myself a little bit on both sides. We'll see how it goes.
No, you're doing fine betting on North Carolina. Thank you, Pam. That's right. He's betting well on North Carolina. Okay, so let's go into I saw something really quickly on Twitter today, and there's apparently is Sammy putting out a pool that people can get into?
Sammy's a squid. Yes, he did. Now they could have gotten into, but I'm using the past tense because today at 9:15 a.m. Pacific time, 12:15 p.m. Eastern, the first game tipped off, and that was it. If you didn't get in by then, you're out. Now there are what's called second chance pools, where once this weekend gets sorted out, the first and second rounds, and they're down to what's called the Sweet 16. You have 4 days until next. A whole week till next Thursday when those games go. And there's some second chance pools and brackets out there that people can get into. But those aren't as popular. They won't be as lucrative. So you may have missed the boat in case somebody wanted to play. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. You can still individually bet on games or get in one of those second chance pools. Usually the big websites will have that.
And, of course, Sammy will take on any kind of bets that we would want to have for UFC London this weekend, yes?
Yeah, UFC, soccer, college basketball, you name it, man. If there's action on it, lvaction.com has you covered. Go to lvaction.com, the website, and you can get access to Sammy himself. There's a lot of more flexible laws here in Nevada where he can help you put in a responsible and legal wager on a sporting event. So check out lvaction.com. But yeah, the UFC fight night, what are we on? 106 card? 107? I can't keep track. But the one in London.
Absolutely.
That one will
be
up for grabs. The World Series of Fighting with their three world title fights. I'm sure those lines will be up. And, you know, anything else that's forthcoming as well. You'll see on Fox 24 with Demetrius Johnson. UFC 210 with Daniel Cormier. A couple champs there putting their chefs on the line. All that, man. It's all up there. It's all ready.
Yeah, and let's talk about World Series of Fighting real quickly because we talked about it, and you had, of course, the president, the big man on your show just, I think it was Tuesday, and it seems like, you know, he's thinking, you know, or he sounds like it's going to be good in 2018. They're going to do less shows this year and then bring on some big shows in next year. So it sounds like onward and upward for World Series of Fighting.
Yeah, he said that, you know, there's going to be some announcements as far as, I think, future fight cards, venues, along with a shift maybe within their executive, you know, the executive branches that they have there for the World Series of Fighting, you know, the guys that call the shots. Also, some roster, maybe additions. I don't know that you would make a big deal out of subtractions, but the fact is they're going to have some subtractions. It sounds like Marlon Moraes, their bantamweight champion, is on the way out. Although Ray Seppo did tell us there's a small percentage out there that they may re-sign him. Justin Gaethje's got one more fight on his contract. That's their lightweight champion. But David Branch has already left them. And he's a two-division champ, so that'll shift things up a little bit in the middleweight and light heavyweight division. But he said we got to wait till June or July for all this to come out. And, you know, he says it's going to be, you know, a huge announcement. What it could be, I don't know. I have no idea. But this weekend they have the three title fights. I think there's some good quality fights there. And, you know, what are you going to do, man? Those guys, when they first arrived on the scene, they resurrected a lot of careers. Andre Arlovsky and Anthony Johnson come to mind. You know, those guys had nowhere to go, and they went out there and cracked some skulls for World Series of Fighting. And now look at those two. Andre Arlovsky took a four-fight win streak into the UFC, did well for himself there, got real close to a title shot, and Anthony Johnson's the guy that will be opposing Daniel Cormier at UFC 210, so he definitely made the most out of his. All that would not have happened if they didn't have platforms for those guys to resurrect their careers. World Series of Fighting provided that. So when he says it, you just got to believe it. You know, all we had to do is wake up, 90 more times, and 3 months will come by, and we'll see what the announcements are.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got new investors. And look, as we've always said, you know, competition is good. You know, it's good to have one, two, and three. We need to have, a minor leagues of MMA. They got to develop somewhere, right, George? They can't just jump right into the UFC and be expected to be stars. They got to build themselves up and, you know, not only learn how to fight, but learn how to promote themselves. Like Ray was saying, they're going to help a lot of these guys, you know, with that kind of stuff. And that's great to hear. I know that both of us are electronic music heads, so this is not going to interest a lot of people, but I thought we'd have a little bit of fun at the end of the show. I was scrolling through some songs, and I came across One More Time by Daft Punk. I mean, it's kind of an old song, but a kind of prolific song for me. So I want to get into your brain because you're an electronic music head. So let's go back and give us some of your favorite songs that, you know, back in the history of electronic music, if you can remember them, because I know sometimes it's a little hard for us to recall the songs because, you know, we were partiers.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing I'm not good at, Proteus, is remembering the titles of songs. I'm really not good at that. But I do recall eras and the names of prominent DJs. How they, I guess, touch me, you know, in terms of being a fan of electronic music. But I've been listening to electronic music for a long time. I was totally against it in the early 90s. I remember some buddies of mine who went to a club, we were listening to hip hop. You know, we're West Coasters, so that was like the hip hop scene was thriving with Tupac and Dr. Dre and Ice Cube, and they had, you know, some great tunes back then. So we'd go to the clubs and go out there. But the after-hour scene was growing in downtown Los Angeles. I remember going to a tech club and hearing it and just thinking, oh, I can't get into it, man. It's just this pulsating bass sound, and it didn't sound too good when I was, you know, drunk as a skunk. So it took me a few years. But then when I finally got it, I really started to, like, immerse myself in it. Of course, the big names that used to be, you know, prominent back then was Paul Oakenfold, Paul Van Dyke, Tiesto, Big Weed, Sasha, a lot of, you know, names like those.
Awesome.
And now, of course, there's so many DJs you can't keep track of. But I'll tell you what I started to do was, rather than focus on the song, I just started trusting the DJ's work. And the one guy I'm really on his nuts is Eric Prydz. Eric Prydz not only is a great DJ, he's not going to splatter you with cake on the dance floor or wear a mouse head or anything like that. But the one thing that one guy can do is he produces the music. He creates the music. I have a lot of respect for someone that can create the music and also blend the songs and mix them. That's on the wheels of steel or electronically through MP3 files. On the Pioneer disc spinners, you know, whatever. Doesn't old school or not,
yeah.
I like Eric Prydz, and I recommend anybody to just give him a chance. In fact, start with EPIC, Epic 003 Eric Prydz, ERICPRYDZ. To start with Epic 001. And watch how this guy takes you through a musical journey, ups and downs, whether you're on a treadmill trying to lose some weight or walking your dog, put some headphones on, you'll really, really dig it. It's a little bit of progressive house with a little bit of trance, but he's got really, really catchy melodies that you'll love. He knows when to drop the bass on you when he needs to. And in person, I think he's taking it to another level. He's got, he puts on a show where he has lasers and, you know, different musical effects where you're just like, seriously, feel like you're on another planet. You feel like you've done mushrooms and ecstasy, even though you haven't. All you had was a glass of wine. Armin Van Buren's good. Barry Corson's good. TJ Dance in the day, he's an American DJ. He was good. Scott Bond, an English guy. I used to really, really like him back in the day. I mean, so many of these guys that I've listened to over and over and over the years. and I really like it.
Yeah, it's Ferry Corsten was, you know, one of my favorites back in the day, and you know, Tiesto, of course, was one of those guys that you just had to listen to because that was what was going on at the time. Great reminiscing with you, and real quickly, before we end, because I just want to get this one last thing out of the way, because we talk about on MMA Junkie Radio, and if y'all don't know, now you know, we're talking to MMA Junkie George from MMA Junkie Radio and USA Today. Let's talk about movies real quick. I know that you've got the old school movies that you love, so let's go ahead and get you into the old school movies that you love and anything new that you've seen real quick that you can recommend to myself and anybody that's listening.
You know, I haven't really seen new movies too often. I need to go. I used to go once a week. We had ourselves our movie night, actually. It was on Thursdays, and I was able to keep track of what was happening, you know, what was in, what was out, more back then. But I just haven't done that in a while. And so, yeah, I'm more of the guy that can just tell you what a good old school movie's like. I feel like right now, a lot of actors started saying, hey, you know what? I'm this guy, I'm that guy. Let's just put out a movie. If the budget says we'll spend $10 million, but we can make $20 million, we'll call it a movie. But it's not quality, you know, it's not a quality
yes.
It's not a quality plot or anything. It's just business. I feel like that's the way things went. You have to sift through what's good and what's not good. But I think what really, really wagged my tail is drama, you know, gangster movies. I love those. I thought the late 80s, mid 90s. Some really, really good stuff there. Comedy, I'm not too into it, man. I'm going to say something right now that's really inappropriate. I think it's because I'm 12 Heinekens in. But there's some really dumb shit that, like, what's his name? Sandler? Aaron Sandler? Albert Sandler? What's his name?
Adam
Sandler. There's some dumb stuff that he'll do, or a few others will say it. And I call it white boy humor. I'm thinking, okay, he cracked the joke. And there's about 80 Caucasians that are laughing at it because it's fucking corny as shit. But I'm sitting there going, nah, you got to really impress me, Adam Sandler. Now, Adam Sandler is a funny guy. It's just that I think he kind of deals with numbers. I'm just going to say 20 things that are somewhat funny. And as long as most people are laughing at him, then I'm good. No, it's not like that with me, man. You can do it one time, but it doesn't mean I'm going to go back and buy your next movie either. You got to crack me up consistently. You know, otherwise, don't put the line out. Leave it out of the script. You don't have to be a funny guy with every single line out there. You know, there's guys like that. Like, I like Vince Vaughn. I think his percentage is a lot higher. He'll make me laugh more than he doesn't make me laugh. But this time where Adam Sandler, he will not make me laugh. Him and some of the other jackals out there, that they just do movie after movie. They fucking do it in numbers. So those little romantic comedies, I'm just not really into them. I like Wedding Crashers. That made me laugh. I thought that had great moments about 10 years ago. But for the most part, I don't know. I guess I've been reluctant to go. And, you know, the movies, it used to be like $5 and you could watch one movie and sneak into two more. But now you got to pay like $10 for popcorn and fucking a soda. And so now you start thinking, is it worth me to rush out there and do this and sit with, you know, 200 other momos in the same theater? Hell no. I'll wait 3 months, 6 months, wait for it to come out on Netflix, and I'll either enjoy it there or I won't. Because if it's not funny within 10, 15 minutes, I'm pulling the plug. So that's the way.
I agree.
There's a lot of great TV shows, and there's a lot of great documentaries now online. So I guess I started to spend my money elsewhere.
I agree, George. And okay, we're going to let you go on this one and get back to your NCAA games. And this has been the inaugural, the debut of Championship Rounds with Gigi. I'm going to let you say goodbye, George, and then I'm going to play you out with your music.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. It's like chatting with friends, and that's why I wanted to do it with you or Tony. It's no offense to any of the others.
Correct.
To contribute, I'll do it as long as one of you two are there, but I feel like I'm supporting you two the way you guys have supported us. So thank you very much. I, you know, like I said, I had a good time. You just let me know when the next one is, and that way I can load up on some Heinekens, and we'll stick to a theme. GG will be slightly buzzed, but we'll keep it real.
Yeah, I love it. You know what? Nothing
like frosty
beverages.
We'll keep it real in the field. You heard?
That's exactly it. We'll end the show. End that on that. Thank you, George.
Okay, guys. Enjoy your Thursday. Really, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Kiki. You're the band.
And like that?
We'll keep it real in the field, you heard?